this is Maggie.
And Ashley.
And you're listening to The Watering Hole, a place where animals and animal enthusiasts regularly drink. Every episode, we'll talk about different animals and why they're cool, from basic biology to the threats they face and what people are doing about it, all while under the influence.
Okay, you can stop pouring. What? She's gonna take all the wine.
It's not that much.
All right. So we've got an episode in store for you.
We sure do, folks.
Oh.
Also, does my shirt make me look like a pirate?
Mm. It didn't until just now.
Okay.
Like, I saw you wear this shirt all day. Yeah. Right now, the sleeves look heavy.
You know what? They are filled with concrete.
Wow. What an interesting
it's a new
design
way
choice.
To, yes, it's a new way
feels
to
very,
build arm muscle.
Oh, feels very New York Fashion Week.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Slash pirate.
Okay,
great.
Also very New York
I'll never forget, I had this nice silky blouse that I wore to the office that we shared with Steve. And he said that I looked like a fancy pirate. And I could never wear that shirt again.
See, I would take that as someone who wanted to be a pirate so bad growing up.
Yeah.
I would take it as the biggest compliment.
Yeah, it just wasn't what I was going for.
That is
you
true.
Know,
when it is
7 years
what
ago.
You're going for it's
when
upsetting.
I was, you know, still trying to impress people.
Pirates, impressive, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know how I started my morning?
Well, you just told me that you have a new morning routine before we started recording, so I could guess. But I bet it's not that.
It's not that.
Okay.
The morning routine is not that interesting, but if you're interested, let me know in the comments below. But no, I was ready to go, had my jacket on. And the night before, I had left Ollie alone, and Ollie likes to counter surf and eat anything he can. So I always have to hide food. I Ollie proof the house. And so I still had the cup left over. Maggie and I went out for New Year's and had a cup of M&M's. And I still had that cup of M&M's.
Oh my God, you brought that all the way home?
Apparently. Apparently. So I had this cup of M&M's, just like a little cocktail cup.
Yeah.
And then I also had, a box of Nerds, the candy.
Yeah.
That I was snacking on yesterday.
You know what I love? A good old box of Nerds.
Box of Nerds.
Usually biologists.
Hell yeah. But no, a box of Nerds with the two sides where you mix the flavors.
Mm-hmm.
They're very old, but they're sugar. So I was eating them yesterday. And so when I had to leave, I put the Nerds in the cup and I put it up in my pantry so that Ollie couldn't get to it. And then when I opened the cupboard this morning to grab something for lunch, it spilled everywhere.
You forgot you had put it up there.
And it had moved or my pantry is very full. And so right before I left for work, there were M&M's and Nerds, and those things, Nerds bounce. They bounce so much.
They're also round, whereas an M&M is at least kind of flattened.
Some of the M&M's shattered. They weren't that far up. They shattered.
Shattered. It was a thin candy shell.
But if you want some Nerds, I still have, the whole thing didn't spill, but those things spread.
Wow, look at that. I feel like you're going to be finding Nerds for months.
I did another check and I found an M&M. That I'd snuck under a cupboard before you came over.
Look at that. That was thorough. Well done.
But yeah, so I tend to spill things a lot.
Yeah.
I did just literally last week tell our coworker about how I opened a thing of ramen and the noodles went everywhere.
Oh, that is the perpetual thing of opening bags that just, this happens with me in dog treats often, much to Argos's pleasure.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They say open here, tear here, and they're not actually made to open that way.
Just get scissors.
Also, cereal boxes.
Oh.
Those are really, I struggle.
You are weak. We didn't realize that earlier today when you're trying to open a bottle of wine.
I was trying to open it aesthetically. You know those videos that are Mercedes, and then they just... Haven't you seen these videos on Instagram?
Are you talking about a commercial?
The commercials that they're making parodies of where they're where they're Bentley. And then they
No, I hate ASMR.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And so they like do things that look, it's just stupid. Nobody touches their car that way. So here I am trying to open the wine bottle with using just my pointer finger and my thumb.
Ah, that was the issue.
That was not how you open a wine bottle.
Just don't do it. It's not worth it.
No.
And then your friend will make fun of you for it. But then you'll drink the wine and record a podcast.
Bentley.
Can I say that again?
Subaru.
That is why we bought our Subarus, because of a commercial just like that. All right. Do you have an animal for us today?
I do indeed. Do you want to hear about it?
Heck yeah, I do.
All right.
I think our audience does too.
They probably do. They're like, nobody cares about the other stuff.
No, that is very true.
So I do have an animal for you.
Good.
And I have a hint. And then if you can't get that hint, I have another that will really help.
But the first one might not actually help?
The first one might be pretty difficult.
All right, all right.
Unless you're somehow on the same wavelength. Okay, so this delicate predator is an aggressive mimic.
This delicate
predator.
Predator.
Is an aggressive mimic.
Is an aggressive mimic. Delicate. I feel like it's like some kind of like praying mantis.
You're close.
Stick. Like a stick bug.
No. Just a stick. I did
a stick. Today I'm here to tell you about the stick. They evolved thousands of years ago. Only thousands.
Stick.
Stick. Okay, but praying mantis was like kind of close.
It was very close.
So it's an insect.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a stick bug.
It's not a stick or a stick bug.
Not a praying mantis. Is it a... That's wasn't what I was going to say.
Also not it.
Is it a... predator. Is it some kind of wasp?
No.
Is it some kind of ant?
No.
Beetle?
No.
Spider?
Mm-mm.
What the fuck?
Would you like the follow-up?
Yeah.
This delicate predator is an aggressive mimic who isn't religious like its well-known green cousin.
Isn't religious?
You just said this animal. You said praying mantis.
Oh!
So this one is not religious like its well-known green cousin. It's
just a mantis.
What kind?
Shrimp.
No, it's not a mantis shrimp, no.
I don't know. Do you think I know of my mantises?
Maybe. You know a lot of things.
Aggressive mantis.
No.
Bully mantis.
No. You're probably not going to get it at this point.
Yeah, I'm not.
Okay, ready?
Yes, I'm so ready.
I'm doing the orchid mantis.
Oh, I do know this one. I don't think I would have guessed it.
Yeah, but that's fine. That's fine.
Still very cool.
Also known as the walking flower mantis, orchid blossom mantid, and the pink orchid mantis.
Okay, I was really close in the beginning.
I know. I thought you
stick
were going to get it.
Stick was far away, but
after
stick bug,
after closer. Stick, you got closer. Yeah, as soon as you said like a mantis, I was like, yeah, you're right there. Right there, right at the finish line.
Woo.
And then you turned around and went back to
the
start.
And then I ran away. I got scared. What's new?
Okay, so the basics. When it was first discovered, and I'd want to point out, because the research I was doing was like, it was first discovered in 18-something, and I was like, you know what? I bet you some indigenous people discovered it before.
A long time ago.
It was definitely known about before some white man was like, I discovered this species. Anyway, so... When it was first discovered, it was this Australian explorer, and he had observed a flower eating insects. So its mimicry is so good that it fooled a human, in other words.
Nice.
It is a white and light pink colored mantis. So if you do know its well-known green cousin, the praying mantis, you imagine a pink and white version of that, and mostly white with some like... pink hues, but it mimics an orchid flower. That's where it exactly gets its name. The four walking legs resemble flower petals, and then the toothed front pair that it uses to catch its prey. I think they're like still also kind of pinkish. You know, just imagine a flower
that's walking around.
Yeah. It can change its color from pink to brown, ooh, depending on the color of its background.
Nice.
Which is very cool. I don't know. I think we talked about this last episode, but we were talking about all the colors that some species might see that we don't see.
Yeah.
So when I read this, that it can change color from pink to brown, I was like, those are the only colors that we've identified it changing to. What if it's changing to other colors, yeah, that we just don't even know exist? Very cool. Anyway, so where is it found? It's found in the rainforests of Southeast Asia. So everywhere from Cambodia down to Indonesia, Laos, Malaysia, Myanmar, Thailand, Vietnam, and the Philippines. So it's all over the place.
Dang.
Southeast Asia, where beautiful orchid flowers are found.
Mm-hmm. Helpful, very helpful.
So why are they aggressive mimics? And this is actually a term used in mimicry.
So I guess question.
Yeah.
Are they aggressive and also mimics, or is the mimicry itself the aggressive aspect?
So think of it as like...
like aggressively friendly. Doesn't mean you're necessarily aggressive. It just means like you're overly very friendly.
So neither, kind of, to answer your question, actually.
Excellent.
Because they're... I'm thinking of it more as a passive versus active voice in language. So like...
also how I was thinking about it, clearly.
So we think of mimicry often in terms of like an owl that can hide in a tree hollow, yeah, or lizards that look like the colors of fallen leaves, the Viceroy butterfly that mimics a monarch so that it can evade predators or deter predators. So they're all using mimicry to hide.
Mm-hmm.
This orchid mantis is using mimicry to stand out. So it's the opposite of trying to hide. They are mimicking aggressively to stand out. So maybe it's kind of like you're aggressively friendly, mm-hmm, but I think of it more as like passive, is like, we're doing it to kind of just be a little like,
we're so like
behind the scenes.
A lot of mimicry is like kind of like camouflage, so you, mm-hmm, like blend in your background so no one sees you, but so they want to be seen.
Exactly, they want to be seen so that they can catch food.
Oh, so that they, because they want food to come to them, because they want like little buggies.
Exactly.
Guys, the pieces, you can see them, hear them, yeah, coming together.
Exactly.
That's my puzzle sound.
So you just sound
I'm the fastest puzzle maker.
You sound like a rodent.
I do sound very hamster-like, and I don't like it.
Reep, reep, reep.
Oh, my God. Gaming.
Because I just listed out several species that use mimicry to hide, I was curious, like, what are some other species that use mimicry to stand out?
Mm-hmm.
And there was actually a fairly obvious list, and we've mentioned one of them on the podcast before. Can you think of another animal that uses mimicry to stand out?
To stand out.
Or to catch prey, more explicitly.
Have we done anglerfish?
Yeah, that was it.
That was it. Nailed it. Uh-huh. I mean, killing it, baby.
You are. That's woo, so good. So anglerfish, they like dangle the little bioluminescent looking thing to catch food. Exactly. I watched Finding Nemo the other day.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's very good.
I love Mr. Ray.
Oh, so good. I love his song.
It's just wonderful. But did you know that Eric Bana is one of the sharks?
Who's Eric Bana?
Oh, I guess he's Hector in Troy. Wow, I'm not that old. You never watched Troy with Brad Pitt?
Yeah, but like once a long time ago.
It was like good-looking men being naked or half-naked. Why wouldn't you watch that? Oh, my God. Okay.
Busy rewatching The Mummy. What do you want from me?
Because you're busy watching Brendan Fraser.
I was watching Brendan Fraser on repeat. I didn't have time. I had to meet my daily quota.
Oh, my God. Okay, so anywho. Where was I?
Anglerfish. Ashley nailed the question.
Yes. So the orchid mantis, it looks like... the Straits rhododendron, specifically, if you were to go look that up, it looks very similar because it...
Is that the Latin name?
No, it's just the type of flower.
Okay.
That it hunts on.
Okay.
Amongst.
But it's... I thought it was that a place?
What's Straits? It's a type of rhododendron. The Straits.
Oh, yeah.
Straits rhododendron. Yeah. Yeah. You there?
I do know
this is not a podcast on plants, but you know.
Listen.
I never said the Latin name of this species.
No, I've been waiting.
Oh, no, it's Hymenopus. Ooh. Hymenopus coronatus.
Ooh, pretty.
Yeah, isn't it? Delicate little predator. H. coronatus shows some of the most pronounced size sexual dimorphism of any species of mantis.
Ooh. So it's one species of orchid mantis.
No, I think that is orchid mantis. Orchid mantis is Hymenopus coronatus.
Yeah, so it's just one species.
Of mantis.
Of mantis.
I thought you said one species of orchid mantis.
Is that the same thing I'm asking? Like, are there different...
There are mantids. That's the genus. And this is a species of mantis.
But there's not different types of orchid mantises.
Correct.
Gotcha. There's just one...
One orchid mantis.
Gotcha. In That's the whole it. World.
Yes. We got there. Where was I again?
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
I was clarifying.
I'm glad you did. Other people were clarifying.
The Straits of Rhododendron.
The Straits of Magellan.
If you go on a map, that's where we are. Panama Canal, go for it.
Okay. Males can be less than half the size of females. This has likely happened because females evolved to support their preferred hunting habits and prey so that they can then protect their clutch of eggs, which they are very attentive mothers up till the eggs hatch, and then even sometimes a little after. They make sure that the young are able to move on.
Graduate.
Like, yeah, it's like, okay, you're good, everybody's good. Okay, get on out of here. It's not like the eggs start to hatch and she's immediately leaving the nest.
She just leaves the eggs and is out
right,
of there.
Right, right. So she stays
protected.
She wants
to watch and be like, you did it? All right.
Yes. And so that's the suspicion why she's likely bigger. She needs to do more. The male is just in it for the breeding. Surprise, surprise. So a study using a spectrometer, which can detect different colors, found that their color is indistinguishable from flowers to pollinators.
Dang.
So that means even if an orchid mantis is nowhere near a bunch of flowers or orchids, it still looks enough like a flower that, you know, you and me as human eyes, we could probably be like, oh, that has antennas. Oh, it has legs. Like, a pollinator is not going to see that difference. They're just going to see the petals and flowers. This also protects in... aids in protecting them from predators.
Ooh.
So it's just a very evolved form of mimicry. Again, we're very aggressive here. What are they eating? Butterflies, as I've kind of alluded to. Butterflies, insects, crickets, flies, beetles, bugs, bees. I don't know what I wrote here.
You just kept going. Can I name all of the bugs I know?
I wrote the same thing a lot of different ways.
Beetles, bugs, little critters.
What is breeding like? This is kind of funny, but I mean, not surprising.
Did someone bite off somebody else's head?
Yes.
Yeah, they do.
We know what it's like in captivity, so that's probably what it is in the wild. But I want to read exactly what I read here because it's just funny.
Please.
The orchid mantis is favored by insect breeders, but it is extremely rare, so it's also extremely expensive. Breeding the mantises is a time-consuming process, as the larger female will try to eat the smaller male once the mating is done. Therefore, the breeder will need to watch the couple throughout the entire process.
Creepers!
A voyeur.
A voyeur.
So it's weird, but like a lot of insects, she just feasts on him after.
Yeah, because she needs the food.
She does, and that makes her.
He got rid of his genetic, the stuff he needed to get rid of. Mm-hmm. His lineage will pass on, and now he's feeding his young with his head.
Blech. But then that being said, what I just read, you might have picked up on it. The orchid mantis is sold as like a, not a pet, but like... a trinket or novelty, something. Excuse me. What just
that was
happened?
Gross.
That was disgusting.
Are you okay?
So the orchid mantis is...
highly revered.
Yeah, it's like a status symbol, like a lot of things in Southeast Asia. Like, oh, look how fancy you are. You have this really pretty flower that is actually a bug, you know?
But
like,
it's alive.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Okay. So that's the biggest threat to orchid mantises right now is the pet trade. But otherwise, they are doing just fine. But just like a lot of species, it shouldn't be captive. Just leave it out in the wild. Observe it from afar.
Just look at it. Take a picture of it. Or just get a regular orchid.
Yeah, just get a fucking flower and be like, if you watch closely, it will move.
Trick your guests.
Yeah, trick your guests. Be like, flower or mantis.
Ooh.
Real or cake?
Exactly.
What is that show?
Real or cake? Isn't it?
I don't think it is. Cake or fake?
Is it cake?
Cake or fake? Yeah.
Is it cake?
Cake or fake would have been a lot better.
Come on, guys. Get Maggie on these marketing teams.
Yeah, right. So there you have it, the orchid mantis.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
I literally want to do a praying mantis, so I won't do it now, but or maybe I will.
Maybe you will, and we'll just learn all about the mantids.
And how they're a little bit different. But that's exciting. I love orchids. I love mantids. Now I love orchid mantids. Oh, look at that.
New species.
All right, you ready?
I am ready.
Okay.
Let's hear it. What's the clue?
All right, my clue is, it sounds eerie, and during the winter can be found on Lake Erie.
Oh. Erie. Is it a bird?
Yep.
Okay. Is it a... Is it a type of duck?
It's not a duck. But it's a water bird.
Waterfowl?
Waterfowl.
Okay. Huh. Is it a merganser?
No.
What sounds eerie? It's not, it can't be a loon. Is it a loon?
Yeah. Why couldn't it be a loon?
I don't know.
For those listening to the podcast and not watching, I am wearing my new loon sweatshirt. So I thought it'd be a dead giveaway. It can't be a loon. I'm like, fuck, why can't it be a loon? You didn't do loons, did you?
No.
I realized I didn't check as soon as you said that.
No, I just thought, because you said they're found on Lake Erie, so I was thinking of like what might only be found there.
Oh, gotcha. Well, that's why I said and during the winter.
I mean, you can find them elsewhere during winter too.
But for the purpose of the clue, they sound eerie and can be found on Lake Erie.
It's a great clue.
It was a great clue.
Woo! Okay. Ready? All right. Tell us about loons.
Please. I will. Please. Please.
This is when we found out Ashley is schizophrenic.
So I am doing the common loon, also known as Gavia emer.
What? That sounds like a spell.
It does. Well, it's a lot of Latin names like spelled. But yeah, Gavia emer? Maybe emer. Emer.
Gavia emer!
Yeah. But for those who don't know, these are large diving water birds with dagger-like beaks known for their moaning call or eerie call.
That was an elephant.
That was just like a celebratory little horn, not a loon call. And I gotta say, Maggie's like pretty spot on usually with her calls. That, not at all. No. But so I'm doing the common loon, but there are actually 5 species of loon.
I was gonna ask.
Do you know them?
No.
Do you want to guess?
There's gotta be like a ring necked of something, right?
Nothing neck related.
Is there a ring?
Nothing ring.
Okay. Is there one that's like got some red in it?
Red? Throated.
Okay, yes. How about like a black-cheeked?
How about a yellow-billed?
Okay. You just gotta pick a color, pick a body part.
I mean,
and like 9 out of 10, you might have something.
If you're doing warblers, 100% you're gonna hit a warbler. Legit. You wanna take any other guesses? So we've got red-throated,
European.
Yellow-billed. No?
Okay.
Common Pacific. Oh. An Arctic.
Oh, there's an Arctic loon.
There's an Arctic loon. Who
wow.
knew?
Okay.
Now you. So I described a little bit of what they look like, but if you've never seen a loon, they are larger than a mallard. So like normal duck. I feel like most people know mallards as their like go-to duck.
Right.
You know? But they're smaller than a Canada goose. So they're between 88 and 215 ounces. Usually I would convert that into pounds, but this time I didn't. So.
How many ounces?
Big duck. Between 88 and 215.
Well, 16 ounces is in a pound.
Okay.
So you said 88?
Yeah.
I'm not good at math. I'm going to say that's somewhere around 8 pounds.
Sure.
5 to 8.
Well, 8 would be at the low end. Anyway, you want to do the math?
You said 88? My dad's going to be
and
so
angry
at me. And
the top is 215. The cap.
215?
Is the big one.
That's a big discrepancy. 80.
What can I say?
Okay, I started at 5, yeah. Didn't I? 88 is 5.
Well, you started at 8 and then you said 5 to 8.
5 to 8, yeah, because I was okay. Like 8 is way too much for 88.
That was 215.
So they start at 5.5 pounds.
Okay.
And they get up to 13.
Dang.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're big birds. I wrote, breeding adults are gorgeous. So again, like I mentioned, I have a loon sweatshirt on.
Yeah, just look at that.
And I love loons. I think they're beautiful. I think they're so cool. So obviously I would describe them as gorgeous, but they really are. They have this really sleek black head and bill that, like I said, is very dagger-like, very sharp.
Yeah.
They have this black and white spotted back and then a black and white vertical striped neck and then red eyes, but not creepy. I also put that.
They're not creepy
they're
not, red eyes.
They're like more of like a like maroon, like a bright maroon.
And even then, because you don't expect to see an animal with a red pupil.
Yeah.
Or a red...
But apparently, the red eyes help them locate prey underwater.
I'm not surprised.
Right?
Low light, red. That seems appropriate.
Right. So where can you find them? So you can find Lake Erie in the winter. So you can find them in freshwater lakes in northern U.S. and Canada during the breeding season, which is summer. They do have a winter migration, and then during the winter migration, they're usually found along the coasts in large numbers, but they may pause their migration, hang out on the Great Lakes as well.
Cool. Does their range overlap with any of the other species?
I do not know. I would say probably.
Okay.
At some point. When they're migrating, it's like all the way down the coast. So I'm assuming...
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know how far down, but like...
I've never seen a loon south of Maine.
Well, now you're making me question that. So when they're all over the place and travel around, who are they with? So they're usually solitary when they're feeding, but they may gather in loose flocks at night.
What bird travels solo? Loons, because they like to be a loon? There's some joke in there. There's gotta be.
Is there?
There's gotta be a joke.
I feel so a loon sometimes. During the breeding season, though, they are monogamous. Females will usually lay 2 eggs, and both sexes will incubate the eggs for 24 to 31 days.
Good job, dads.
Right? The females do tend to incubate a little bit more, but hey, dad's there. We'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
The young leave the nest after 1 to 2 days and can swim underwater only after 2 to 3 days.
1 to 2 days.
Both parents tend to the young and feed them, and sometimes the young will ride on the parent's back. And they can fly 10 to 11 weeks after hatching, which is wild that they can swim so quickly, but then weeks later, they finally can fly.
Well, loons are not great.
They're not great.
That's not great
flyers. That's not their, like, number one priority.
Like, I'm sure you're going to get into their flying habits in a bit.
A little bit.
Okay.
But so what are they doing? What are loons doing? I don't know why I put it like this.
Being birds.
Lots of foraging. They forage by diving and swimming underwater, propelled by their back feet, looking for small fish, minnows, suckers, perch, gizzard, shad, rock cod, and killifish, which they'll eat underwater. But if they get larger things, they'll bring them to the surface to eat, like crustaceans and frogs.
Very good. Cool.
Eat frogs. When we were in Maine, we saw one that was like eating a little lobster.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
It was also like a very young loon, it looked like, and was like...
Probably regretted that.
It was like, I don't think you're winning this fight trying to get this lobster
but
down.
But like they will, like you said, they will eat crustaceans, but it was probably just a...
Yeah, it looked like it was...
Juvenile trying it out.
Its eyes are too big for its stomach, so they're swimming. Foraging. So loons actually have solid bones, which make them better at maneuvering through the water. So
wow, that helps them be better swimmers.
Yeah.
But that's fascinating because fish bones aren't that heavy, are they?
Well, fish are built to be underwater. Birds were originally built to not be underwater.
Were they? No, but I'm thinking
so like
of
most
like
birds have hollow bones.
Exactly, yeah. But like...
But everything else has normal bones?
Why does this feel so unique?
It's unique for your loon. For loon. My rose is over.
I don't know what I'm getting at.
I don't think...
Fish bones are so... I don't know. I'm thinking of...
Fish bones are light, but they are still solid bones.
Okay.
I get your question, but I feel like you were missing the point.
I'm in awe.
I mean, they're not rock bones. They're not sinking to the bottom of the
lake. They don't have cement in their sleeves.
No cement in these sleeves.
Okay. All right, fine.
Anyway, and they can stay underwater for up to 5 minutes. Mm. So when they're courting each other, these monogamous pairs, when in courtship displays, pairs dip bills into the water rapidly. And by rapidly, I mean repeatedly, but I'm guessing it's pretty fast. They rear up to a vertical position with wings partly spread, race side by side across the surface of the water. And they're like, oh, what a good dance. You want to have some babies.
Yeah. You want to lay some eggs.
Obviously. So building a nest. That's something else that they're doing. But they're building their nest. Both sexes participate in nest building. And they build their nests near the water on shore, hidden by vegetation. And the reason that they're building their nests so close to the shore, whereas a lot of other seabirds will build their nests on rocks or things like that, or up on, you know, up away from the water, is because these guys can barely walk on land.
Right.
They're just not designed for land.
Not at all.
So their legs are actually set too far back on their bodies, which helps them to dive better, why they're such great swimmers and divers. But it makes it really, really awkward to walk.
You know what else it doesn't help with?
What?
Flying.
Okay, well, here's the thing. They can reach speeds up to 70 miles per hour.
Taking off, I should
say. But I was going to say, they always have to take off from water. They can't take off from land. Right. So they need, like, a big runway of water in order to take off.
They're like an aquaplane.
Airborne. Exactly what I was going to say. But one thing I learned, so if you follow me on Instagram or on TikTok, which no one probably here does, but maybe you do, I went to bird camp this summer that Maggie is one of the co-directors of. And in learning about loons, which I already loved loons, but then I got to learn more about loons and sea loons and hear loons, and it was beautiful. They told us, I forget who told us, that one issue that loons are facing is when they're flying, they'll go to land and what they think is a lake or something because they see a reflection, but it turns out to just be a parking lot. Mm-hmm. Big, empty, vast of asphalt terrible. That reflects light, but it looks like a lake, and they'll land, and because they cannot take off from land,
they're stuck,
which is so sad, and they're finding more and more loons. Like, luckily, people are helping them out and, you know, calling, like, animal control or, like, wildlife places, but they get stuck in parking lots.
It's so sad. It's like the song. Paved paradise.
Put up a parking lot. A loon wrote that. Did you know? A loon wrote that. So they are, back to this flying thing, so they can fly pretty well. It's the takeoff that is the most problematic. Now, vocalizing. Like I said in the beginning, they're eerie. They're known for their call. And if you haven't heard a loon call, maybe I'll sneak one in. They're just so gorgeous and, like, haunting, but, like, so calming. But they also have multiple kinds of calls. So the most common ones are a tremolo, the yodel, the wail, and the hoot. And they all have different purposes. The tremolo, spelled T-R-E-M-O-L-O, is the laughing call, communicating its presence to other loons.
Okay.
I thought you were going to try to do it.
I was going to try.
I don't think you should. Oh, you could. No, go for it. I'm supportive.
That's the, like...
laughing call. Oh!
Like that?
Yeah!
But, like, loud. Much louder.
Yeah, yeah. I'll boost the audio, so just that loud.
Yeah. Okay.
The yodel, which is a long and complex call made by males to establish and maintain territory.
Wait, what, I don't know that. Okay, keep going.
The wail, a long call consisting of three notes and communicates location to other loons. So I think that's the one
that's, the one
that's
we
like
know.
That, you know, you're the at eerie. Night and you hear it.
Kind of, but like higher pitch.
Yeah, that was pretty good though. Shit, that was good.
Was that good?
I think that was good. You know, I'm not even gonna try because it was gonna be embarrassing before, but like now it's gonna be really embarrassing.
I couldn't do it again.
That was good. And then the last one is a hoot, short and soft, usually used in family groups. Sure. I don't know. I'm guessing.
What if it's just hoot?
Hoot. Very human sounding. Hoot. Make sure you pronunciate the two. Pronunciate. Enunciate. That was more for me than anyone else.
Pronounce. Okay.
But, so, that's loons. How are they doing? So, they don't have, I guess, generally speaking.
Common loons, right? Yeah.
Common loons. They have few predators of adults. Sea otters and large raptors will prey on them. However, eggs and chicks are eaten by raccoons, ravens, bald eagles, mink skulls, crows, snapping turtles, skunks, foxes, northern pike, and muskies. But that's really just...
What's a muskie?
I think muskrat, maybe?
Didn't you say muskrat earlier?
No.
Okay.
I said mink? But that's just food chain. That's just...
Yeah, that's normal.
Circle of life. That's what I was looking for. But their populations are overall stable. They have disappeared from some of their former nesting areas because of human disturbances on lake during the summer. Makes sense. More people recreating on lakes.
Yeah.
We're going to make sure we're sharing that.
Coexisting.
Yeah, baby. And then acid rain reduces their food supplies. And then, of course, climate change. Because of climate change. They're projected to lose much of its breeding range due to warming. So there's lots of loons already up in Canada, but the ones that are in the United States are primarily breed in the northern areas like Maine. And as it warms, they'll keep moving up to Canada, which Canada's great, but it can't have all the loons. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Canada.
Oh, Canada.
And that's loons. Just a reminder, though we are animal enthusiasts, we're not scientists. We've never claimed to be. Do your research. We just want you to get excited about animals like we are. Thank you for joining us on this episode. If you like our podcast, make sure you subscribe wherever you are listening and leave us a review. It'll help us reach more animal enthusiasts like you. You can also find us on Instagram at The Water and Hole Pod, on YouTube at The Water and Hole Pod, and you can visit our website, thewaterandholepod.com. I have to burp. Tune in next time when we learn more.
We do learn more. We will learn more.
Tune in next time when we learn about more animals, their biology and habitat, the threats they face, and what people are doing about it.